So, bro, how was Alaska?
Oh, man. Dude, everything about Alaska.
I should say, how did you like Alaska? Because we were both there.
Yeah, that's true. You would know. I hope you would know.
I did.
How did I feel about it? Honestly, Father Max texted me today and was just said, like, thanking us or thanking me for being there again or whatever. Yeah. And I texted him back and I said, like, honestly, this was one of the best weeks of my life, I think.
That's amazing.
I texted him,
it was easily the best week of my year.
Yeah. It just,
no question.
Everything about it, the people, the beauty that we were surrounded by daily. Mm-hmm. I loved every person on that trip.
Like, same.
Such quality people, such good conversations.
So many.
And diverse people, like very diverse people. I mean, ranging from students who had just finished their freshman year of college, mm-hmm. to, you know, guys who are quite a bit older.
Right. And everybody jived. I didn't feel like there was anyone who was, like, left out or...
No. I know Father Max, they warned us at the beginning, like, hey, I don't want to see any clicks. And really, right. I don't think there was.
No.
And the beauty of Alaska, mm-hmm. and the spiritual nature of a lot of the stuff that we did, too.
Yeah.
In some ways, too, coming back... I had spiritual direction today talking to Father Tom about, what happened at the waterfall.
Yeah.
And how that,
crazy stuff, dude.
Kind of,
we were almost done podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. Francisco almost didn't come back from Alaska. Got sucked under a waterfall that I was definitely too close to. Yeah. I was not expecting to go under it.
Yeah. This is a public service announcement for everybody. You don't actually have to go beneath the rushing water of a waterfall to get to be in danger, because what it does is, you know, the waterfall that powerful. It, we were at by a really powerful,
very powerful, thousands of gallons of water.
Exactly. It creates an undertow. So you were just waiting near it. You were pretty close to it, but you weren't under it.
No.
And then suddenly you just disappeared.
I got sucked underneath and I was flipping around under there. Water was like, you know, gushing over me.
It pushed you down like feet below the surface.
Yes. Right? I had no idea how far below I was.
Which is crazy, because right before that, we're wading in probably 3 feet or 4 feet of water.
And my first thought was, when I went under, is I'm going to die. And then...
It's a crazy thought.
I got shot up. I swam and got shot back up pretty quickly. And I caught my breath, got up, but then I went back down under again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I surfaced a second time, and that's when I was able to stay above water.
I was freaked for a second when I didn't see you come out.
I was terrified. It was honestly terrible. It was probably one of the most, like, crazy experiences I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
But coming back from that too has its own level of, like, a spiritual experience, mm-hmm. and I mean just emotionally, like, that there's, you know, things that, you know, I
was, well, it's traumatic.
Yeah, exactly. So with all that being said, I have a lot of reactions to it, like, amazing, traumatizing, beautiful,
definitely
so
memorable,
authentic.
For all those reasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it definitely, lots of core memories were made, mm-hmm. on this trip, for sure.
Yeah, Inside Out, you got like the yellow balls and what are the colors? The
green, orange, exactly. Red. Yeah.
Well, what's the fear? Fear's purple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got a purple one.
Oh, I had
for
a very
sure.
solid purple fear.
And mostly joyful, but that was wild, yeah.
How about you? How you feel coming back?
That was amazing. Like I said, it was the best week of my year so far. One of the best weeks of my life. I also agree that, just aside from the activities like were incredible.
Yeah.
By themselves.
Charter fishing, hiking a mountain.
Whitewater rafting.
Whale
watching. Yeah, dude. I saw so many whales. Saw these super cool sea lions going at it with each other.
That was funny.
That was epic. Met a bunch of marmots.
Me.
Yeah, dude. Okay, marmots scream. They make a sound like what he just made.
They're called whistling pigs is another name.
Yeah.
And they actually see. We'll play a sound right now. It sounds like this. It's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. So it was crazy. It was just like an amazing experience just by the activities themselves. Like if it was just like you and me and maybe a couple other people, it would have been amazing just by the activities. But you add to that the quality of the people that we were with, and it was just incredible. I didn't expect, honestly, to have so much fun with the people. I didn't expect to, like, form deep friendships with these
Nate
people.
Got dragged into, I mean, I at least knew pretty much all of these people because of campus ministry. There's a few students I didn't know quite as well, and then a couple of the chaperones that were added that I didn't know at all. Like
I didn't know almost anyone, though.
But Nate Bailey knew anyone. John Paul, me, Father Max, and Vince. That's about it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I wasn't even thinking about the people going into it. Not that I was planning to ignore anybody. I just wasn't on my mind.
Yeah.
But they were amazing, and I'm just so grateful to have gotten to meet those people. So Yeah, it was a wonderful trip. But with all that in mind, since we both had amazing experiences, how do you feel now that you're done? Like, how does it feel to be back? Because I don't know. I know for me personally, coming back from an amazing experience can be a little bit melancholy.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. That's why, like, going back through and looking, we had an app, if you heard of it, it's called Photo Circle. It's basically a way to share photos from an experience altogether without having to download them.
We have like 3,000.
We have so many pictures. It's unreal.
It's gonna be crazy.
But just like scrolling through those and just looking at all of those, I've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
Talking about Alaska a lot. I mean, yeah, we've only been back for what, like 24 hours, not even from the plane, but
right.
Still, yeah. I also feel like, yeah, a little melancholic, a little, I'm not going to say depressed. That's an overused word.
Right.
And it's
right.
When it's a state and not an emotion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, definitely kind of sad.
It's coming off of a high.
Sort yeah. Of, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
When you combine with that, the amount of sleep, sleep deprived we are. See, I can't even speak.
Yeah.
We're so sleep deprived that when you come off of an experience like that and you're a little bit tired, it makes it all the more, a little bit sad.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I think a word that I used earlier was just tender. Like, it was a beautiful experience and like, we need to come back, you know, we can't just live there forever.
No.
With those people, that'd be great, but we can't.
Right.
So, and then having to get thrust back into like right back into things in the monastery. We had a great day today. We went to Our Lady of Mount Carmel Festival. It had tons of fireworks.
It was awesome.
It was Italian lunch. It was a lot of fun too, but still different.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of putting on the brakes real fast is a challenge. And I was talking to you about this too, actually. One of my favorite lines, it's a very missed line maybe. I don't know. I don't hear many people talking about this, but from the Return of the King movie,
it's in the book.
It might be in the book. It's just been harder. It's been longer for me since I've read the book. I don't want to quote that it is from the book or not. I just know it is from the movie. But at the very end, Frodo walks into Bag End. And he just kind of looks around. Everything looks the same. Everyone is smiling and the same in the Shire, but he's gone through all that he did, crossing Middle Earth, destroying the ring, going through everything he did. And he just says, like, how can you pick up the threads of an old life? When like so much has gone on in the world, and I truly feel that I've had that experience with this trip for sure. But other times when we come back from like let's say Catholic Family Land or in high school,
every year coming back from that.
Going to Catholic Hardware Camp or to Catholic Leadership Institute,
coming back from NCYC,
yeah,
it's always the fun experiences that also are spiritual.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Like if I just go to like an amusement park, that's fun, but I don't come back feeling sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's when God is also involved or the people I'm with also, we share something deeper than just a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of how I feel. Like there's like a little tenderness of like, I want to be back there with those people and just live and breathe like the Christian like charitable love that was like clearly present there.
Oh yeah. It was such a environment of joy and like fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go from that where you're like spending all day every day with these wonderful people to now kind of just going back to your normal routine. And also it's just, this is interesting what you're bringing up, I think is a more and more to me just a really fascinating concept, is this relationship between goodness and pain or between beauty and pain. Kind of we talk about the three transcendentals are truth, goodness, and beauty. The three big ones. But kind of I think whenever you experience those, but especially goodness and beauty, in this life, whenever we experience those, they're accompanied by a little feeling of pain with it or some sort of suffering, right?
Because you can't, like, have them eternally. Basically.
Exactly. Because you can't have them eternally. You can't have them in their absolute fullness while we're in this life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just for example, with this trip, there was so much goodness in the people around us. There was so much natural beauty in Alaska. I mean, Alaska's gorgeous, dude. Where we were, it was
the
magnificent. The pines just everywhere.
Mountains.
Just mountains of pines. And, yeah, snow-capped mountains everywhere. Gorgeous ocean coming. Basically, the Alaskan Channel?
Yeah.
Was directly in front of our cabin where we were staying. It was about 40 yards from us, was just the waters of the Pacific. And so there's so much natural beauty there. There's beauty in the activities we do. There's beauty in the very people that we're interacting with. So, but that now brings on a certain amount of pain because now we're separated from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What are your thoughts on just that relationship?
Absolutely. And I think it's when you experience something that's beyond you, you know that there's more like to reality.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you can't have it fully, and you're almost reminded of your like our like
limitedness,
not insignificance, but yeah, limited nature, mm-hmm. that I can't have this forever, but I want it. But then there's also almost this guilt of like, am I being selfish that I want it?
Right.
But yeah, having to walk away from pain, or not pain, having to walk away from beauty or something that's good is painful.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotion, at least as Aquinas talks about, the emotion of sorrow is either one that's caused by being like not being able to have a good we desire, or being forced to be around a good we don't, or an evil that we don't desire.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this case, it's kind of both. We're absent from the good of fellowship in this community and like the love of friendship,
mm-hmm.
And the beauty of creation that's very apparent in Alaska. We're deprived of that, so there's a level of sorrow, but then we're also forced to be like back into these places that are familiar, and sometimes familiarity can breed contempt.
Yes.
So then now you're also around these things that you don't like, so you're forced mm-hmm. to be put into like this double sorrow.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And what it reminds me of, I'm glad you brought up Aquinas, but it also reminds me actually of something from Plato, and especially his work on beauty, or one of the Platonic dialogues called the Phaedrus. So in that let me step back for a second.
Yeah.
I think what we're getting at here is that when you encounter something really good and beautiful in this life, it reminds us of a more unlimited goodness or beauty that you can possess forever, and that is, you know, exists in its fullness. And obviously that's God, right? God is transcendent beauty and goodness itself. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're talking about is when we experience these good things in this life, it reminds us of God, kind of wakes us up to and lifts us out of ourselves towards God. And so then when we have to separate ourselves from these good or beautiful experiences, it kind of reminds us that we are still separate from God in some regard.
Mm.
It's like, in a way, I think these moments of beauty beckon us towards heaven. And so that feels really good in a way. But we remember we're not in heaven. We're not in that perfect eternal possession of these good and beautiful things. And so getting back to Plato, Plato talks about how in his work, The Phaedrus, he's talking about love. He's talking about erotic love. But he's talking about the fact that if you love somebody, you will kind of experience both great joy in their presence, but also some pain.
Mm.
And he says it's because, you know, Plato has this idea, sort of the reincarnation or what he calls recollection. It's the idea that in some way we existed before we took on the bodies that we currently have.
Yeah.
And so we experienced realities, transcendental realities, before we were dropped into this earthly body. And we as Catholics don't believe in reincarnation, but there's some hint of truth in what he's talking about, which comes from grace, which is, as Plato says, before we were, like, you know, inhabiting these earthly bodies, we were dwelling among the gods.
Mm.
That's what he says. And we were dwelling among the gods in some sort of more perfect state. And we were experiencing them. We were kind of worshiping them, and we were devoted to them. And now in this life, we sometimes encounter reminders of the gods which we were devoted to. And we encounter those in the people that we like fall in love with.
Yeah.
So say, you know, according to Plato, if you were in the previous life and you encountered, we could say Zeus, you know, a very powerful, strong kind of god. Well, now in this earthly life, if you meet someone who's very powerful and strong, you're going to be kind of reminded of Zeus deep down inside, even though you can't put it into words. You're reminded of the gods. And so then you feel this love for this person, and you like feel the devotion that you would feel for the gods. But you're not able to be in the fullness of their presence the same way you could with the gods. So there's anguish. There's that pain that gets introduced along with the love. So you feel great joy in being around them, but you also feel that suffering. And again, Plato is, you know, maybe tongue-in-cheek kind of rooting that in Greek mythology. He's rooting that in this polytheistic understanding, or this idea that incorporates reincarnation. But I think we can take the same truth and apply it to what we know as Catholics, which is God has placed in our hearts a longing for him and for heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we're in the presence of really good things, whether it's people we love or, you know, the beauty of Alaska or any like fun experiences, we feel this simultaneous joy, but also this pain, because we feel joy because it reminds us of the goodness of God, but we feel pain because even on like a subconscious level, we're reminded that we still don't yet possess that beauty that's eternal in heaven.
Mm-hmm. You know? I have like several different things I want to respond to that with.
Yeah.
First,
sorry, that was
no, long. No. It was really good. No, and like these are kind of going in somewhat different directions.
That's
so
fine.
Apologize
yeah.
for that. The first is just to ask, like, do you experience this reality of when you're in a really good time with someone, just being like saying, like I know, like gaslighting yourself that this is going to end, and like but we actually have to say goodbye, so mm-hmm. it can't be nearly as good as I'm telling as it is right now, because I actually do have to say goodbye in the end.
Yeah.
Do you do that to yourself? Because I do that to myself.
Yes.
And it really frustrates me that I do it,
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, oh, but now I'm missing like the present moment here.
You can't even always fully enjoy the experience because you're aware that soon you're not going to
anymore. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I do that.
I've done that too.
So there's that. Second was, you know, when you're saying that, like you come back from these moments aware that like, oh, well, yeah, what we're really missing is like the true goodness, mm-hmm. like of God. Does that actually come as like a recollection? Because I can't say that that's like my first, depending on what we do. Like when I come back from Catholic family land, that is kind of like a full recognition.
So clearly a spiritual.
Yeah. And they tell us like, this is a little bit of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And this is reality, like us being together, unified unity. That's it's, you know, another transcendental being so unified, whether it was our group in Alaska or the families at family land, we're all united in a faith too. And in our like love of Christ fundamentally.
Mm-hmm.
But Catholic family land kind of has a special like place in that kind of consideration that I'm like, yes,
well, what I know I'm actually longing with God.
For. Yeah. What I know I'm longing for is heaven, but I can't say a lot of those other experiences I come back from, that's like my first encounter. It's more like I want to find a way to replicate that again.
Mm-hmm.
And like
you're saying, what's not your first experience?
Thinking like, oh, what I really am, what my heart really longs for is God. Like I just I'm not good like that.
Oh, I don't actually. And, oh, sorry, finish your question.
Yeah. So I guess my question is like, do you believe, or do like you listeners believe that like those amazing experiences that like God could fulfill you there too? So like, because I think like, oh, the best thing to make me feel better about how I feel right now about leaving Alaska is to go get together with all those people or some of those people or see mm-hmm. them or talk to them, or I can, or the fact that you have to leave tomorrow, like that's even, that makes it harder for me too. Like, or at least extending this a little bit, but I can't say like my first go-to is an, oh, well then that means I need to lead into God more because he truly is the answer. Do you do that? Because I certainly don't, you know, and I'm a monk and I like to think that I do that, but I know I don't.
No, I wouldn't say that's actually what I experience. And that's not quite what I was saying.
Okay.
Because I wish also that my first resolution as soon as I feel some sadness is like, oh, I'm just going to lean in my relationship with God. But that's not my first reaction. I think more what I was trying to say is just the very fact that these experiences cause us pain is a proof that these experiences are foreshadowing of our eternity with God.
Okay.
So gotcha. not that every time you feel sad after a great trip with friends that you should, or that it's going to be natural for you to think, now I'm going to go pray for a while to mm-hmm. feel better. I'm just saying more, I think because we are ordered towards heaven, we've been summoned to heaven by God, you know, he's mm-hmm. he's beckoning us to himself. That is the reason why these good experiences also are accompanied by pain, is because the good experiences remind us of him. And that's even, I think, why, you know, with these kind of things, like you said, your first reaction might be to think, oh, those wonderful people I was with in Alaska, I want to meet up with them again. Mm-hmm. It's because what do you want to do there? You want to make more permanent the experiences you had with them, which is what is the lasting permanence is eternity in heaven.
Yeah.
So I think all I'm saying is that the phenomenon of pain accompanying beauty
mm-hmm.
is a proof that it's something that kind of comes from God.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think it also is a reality check, though, for me to just be like, yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it explains why we want to do those things. But then also to rely on God.
Yes.
Or to actually then go to that
It would
step.
Be better if we probably were more inclined that way. Yeah.
So what is your response then? Because, I mean, my natural response isn't necessarily like, you know, more prayer or like sometimes it's processing, but processing can also sometimes be painful. There's like just the right amount of like, at least for me, like just the right amount of thinking about it that it's like not really painful, but it's also so I don't forget. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah,
for people who are listening, you know, whether they've had like amazing experiences and they just maybe are living too much in nostalgia, or for us, you know, how do we respond to that, leaning into that pain, that sorrow? How have you responded? What do you think are like the ways one does respond, and what is the best way to respond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the solution is to live in the present moment, because it seemed like what you were alluding to with your own approach, which I think is healthy, is that you said you don't want to be dwelling so much on the good experience you just had, but you also don't want to ignore it. You do take what was good from it and appreciate that and remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a way, you know, the present moment is that perfect balance between recalling the past and embracing the past, but also moving to the future and continuing to have progress. So, because I think there's two extreme ways that you could go when you're coming away from an amazing experience, and both of them are wrong. So the first extreme would be to get fixated on the nostalgia.
Yeah.
So that's like with the experience we just had, where we have so many photos and videos.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to just spend the next few months just scrolling through those videos and photos and like thinking about how amazing I was, or like just always wanting to be like messaging the people that I interacted with on the trip, and I was just remaining in the past and like, man, I wish I was still in Alaska. Man, I wish we were still doing those amazing things. That would be unhealthy. That would be one extreme. But then on the other extreme, what that might be tempting to do, but would also be bad, would be if I just said, well, I don't want to feel sad about the fact that I'm done with Alaska. So instead, I'm just going to think about the future. I'm just going to think, okay, what's the next big thing on my calendar? Let me just count down the days till my next big trip. Or let me just work on a bunch of projects and bury myself in busyness so that I don't even have to think about the experience I just had. I think both of those are unhealthy, because one, you know, is dwelling too much in the past and the other is dwelling too much in the future. But I think what's in the middle is the present moment, and that's where you should live, where in the present moment, we do feel a little bit sad that we're done with Alaska. And so it's healthy for us to feel some sorrow about that, but also to look back with gratitude on what we just experienced. But then we can also, to some extent, we don't let that those nice memories and trying to hold on to those memories prevent us from just doing our daily tasks and moving boldly into the future. Because, you know, it can be tempting with nostalgia to get so fixated on it that you kind of get paralyzed and you don't continue just doing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think in the present moment, if we just embrace what's right in front of us, we still let ourselves feel what we're feeling, but we don't let it prevent us from moving forward.
You know? Mm.
And then that's a more joyful way to approach, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it seems like a good, like, mean between the two kind of extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think too, for me, like, so I generally try, like, not try, I like, I'm generally not like a super emotional person. Like, yeah. I don't have like high, like, emotional responses to things. I laugh, you know, but like these trips or these activities or whatever, they do touch a more emotional part of me.
Sure.
That I kind of try to go back and like almost recreate those emotions for myself. Mm-hmm. And I do not think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
And nostalgia can
you
be a way.
You try to relive the feelings you were having on the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nostalgia can be kind of a way to like sort of induce that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the future, avoiding the future definitely is what I would do, because like, well, I don't know in the future if I'm still going to feel this way or all these other things, or if I forget, so to avoid it. But then I have also done the other extreme, which is like, well, I don't want to feel any of them at all.
Right.
So I'm just going to jump into making myself busy or distracting myself.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly distracting myself with the most mind-numbing things, too. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, at least I can be entertained.
Just like fun. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I feel like binging and vegging are common things people do right after they've had a great experience, because they like – or it's a temptation I've even had.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to think over much about how sad I am that thing just ended. Well, I'm just not going to be sad. I'm just going to, like, fill myself with entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you said about being in the present moment is allow yourself to feel what you're feeling right now. That's it. We're not denying, feel what you're feeling right now.
Right.
But it's not – but don't exasperate it.
Right.
Or don't, like, try to make something that's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But
let yourself feel what you're feeling. Because, like,
exactly.
The couple of days after a great trip or after any awesome experience do suck a little bit. Like, I think it's natural to feel a little melancholy after at least as good an experience as we just had.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, okay, let it suck a little bit. Just let the feelings be there. They're going to go away, but don't try to rush them out of the picture.
Yeah, and don't hold on to them when they're not still there.
Yeah. Don't get caught up, like, listening to sad music. I mean, this we're talking about a trip right now, but this applies to a lot of things in life.
Yes.
I think it applies to, like, getting over a breakup or, you know, if you feel sad about something, or if you're having any rough phase in your life, you kind of want to find a balance between letting yourself feel what you're feeling. Don't try to suppress your emotions, because that's not going to be healthy for you. But also, don't dwell in them. Don't wallow.
And I definitely, like, know I could have the tendency to wallow.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because, like, and this, I mean, this is starting to get, like, kind of open, personal, but, like, almost acting more sad than I actually feel, mm-hmm. hoping that people notice.
Oh,
so that they'll ask and they'll give me attention that I want. Exactly. Because I had good, not attention, but, like, people noticed me. People wanted to talk to me on this trip, right? We were in the in crowd of that 27 people,
sure.
right? And now I'm just one of the monks, or I'm just, like, one of the guys in around, right? I'm not one of the few people that is, like, the center of attention anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to create that center of attention is to exasperate kind of the sorrow I have so that people then ask me about it. I get their attention and I get to relive the emotion. Like, it's...
That's really insightful.
It's just
a, I've done similar things and I never really thought of it that way.
I don't know. I don't know why I mentioned that, but other than...
Oh, it's good.
It's... Yeah, I get it. And it's not... It hasn't helped me. It's never helped me.
It never helps.
It makes it 10 times worse. Mostly because, one, I'm not actually living the experience still, so I'm annoyed about that. But two, most of the people don't give me the kind of attention I actually want them to give,
so then
I get mad at them.
Yep, for something that's not really their fault.
Exactly.
Right.
How do they know how I feel? And if someone really asks how I'm feeling, then I give them what I feel and accept however they respond to it, instead of, like, well, I wanted you to say this, or I wanted you to ask me about this, or I wanted to blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think... there's some level of catharsis, which is healthy, but then it can be taken too far. I think catharsis can also become addicting, because there's a feeling when you are in your feels or you're sad about something, that there's a point to which it's maybe good to listen to some sad music, or like we keep saying, let yourself feel what you're feeling, or seek out somebody to talk to. Like, if you're actually having a really bad day for whatever reason, it's good to reach out to a friend and be like, hey, can we talk?
Yeah.
But I think after you've let yourself feel what you're feeling for a little while, you know, find out what's healthy or what's proportionate to the kind of thing you're thinking about. Maybe it's a day. Maybe it's just a few hours. After that, you should move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you listen to sad music after while you're in the midst of that sorrow, whether it was for a breakup or any other reason, eventually you have to stop listening to sad music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that there's one point in my life where I would, like, listen to a good bit of sad music. Just was like, it was kind of cathartic and, like, it was vibey.
Yeah,
but then I realized, like, it was making me feel sad sometimes, because music has an effect on my emotions.
Yeah,
I think it does with most people. But it would make me sad, and I realized, like, I don't have a reason to be sad right now. It's literally just the music. Like sometimes you can start doing, like, seeking out some cathartic experience because you're actually have a legitimate reason for doing so. But then the sources of catharsis, whether it's music or whatever, can actually go beyond when you've reached the limit where you shouldn't be feeling sad anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, you know, intentionally stop, you can kind of just continue to wallow and dwell in that place, but you eventually just got to move forward.
It's funny, thinking about this before, like, the church defined what the seven capital sins were. John Cashin, who's an early monastic writer, writes about the eight principal vices, and one of them is sadness.
The other seven are the seven we know, but sadness is the eighth.
And it's not like being sad about, you know, that your parents died or that...
Right. There's a legitimate form of sorrow.
That you feel lonely or anything like that. But it's actually, like, creating, like, this atmosphere or environment of, like, a self-pity.
Like, woe is me.
In order for other people to notice you, to give you attention, to make you feel better about yourself. Ultimately, John Cashin connects all of the vices to pride. And he's saying that this is a connection to pride by saying, like, you deserve more than you have right now, so you should feel sad for yourself, and therefore have other people then give you what you want, whether it's emotionally, physically, psychologically, whatever it is, you know, materially. I don't know. I definitely, until this moment, I can't say I ever thought about that as, like, a prideful thing. That, like, I deserve people to make me feel better. And we all deserve companionship. And I think to go back to when we're talking about unity, in my Catholic social ethics class that I took last year, one of the principles of social doctrine is the common good, which, and we talked about that in our episode on patriotism. Check it out. It's the summer. We love America. Go check out our episode on patriotism. But we talked about how in that episode that, like, we don't just love the country for the sake of the country, but for the unity that it causes. Sure. We love, like, you know, that itself is a higher good mm-hmm. than just the good of having a country.
Right.
For the sake of the union is why we desire to be mm-hmm. for each other. And when we really experience unity, I think we're talking about beauty and goodness, but I think also when we truly experience unity mm-hmm. is that's what heaven is yes. being in communion mm-hmm. with God and with the body of Christ.
Right.
Then when we really experience unity, any step back from that feels like we're getting ruptured.
It does.
And that's, and then loneliness setting in so fast, even mm-hmm. if I'm like with someone, I'm like, but this isn't the same feeling I had before.
Yeah.
This isn't the same kind of union, connection, mm-hmm. companionship. So then to try to get that out of people is why then like yeah. the kind of leaning into that sadness or that self-pity is like, well, I can foster that pseudo-union at least as best as I can.
Yeah. Yeah, we went from being around like a dozen wonderful people who were, yeah. like, we're spending all day and all night with them. So then, like, to try to kind of compensate now that that's taken away from you, you might be tempted to reach out and be like, I just want to find, like,
yeah.
a dozen new people to fill that void. But
mm-hmm.
to some extent, it can be prideful in a way because it's prideful in one way because it's insofar as it's seeking out just it's all about me. Like,
yeah.
please look at me. Woe is me. But I think it's important and healthy to realize that it does come out of a healthy sure. need.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think
it is not good for man to be alone.
It's not good for man to be alone. We were not made for that. And so it's like, it's important to realize friends are supposed to check in with each other. They're supposed to be there for each other.
Mm.
And not just, you know, for fun times. They're supposed to be there for each other emotionally. And so, like, if you're a friend, you it's honestly your obligation as a friend every now and then to reach out. And if you think your friend is having a rough time or feeling sad, you should be there for them and you should be like, hey, could we talk about this? And then that is a way in which we can experience unity in a healthy way where we don't feel the need to be really needy and grasping for unity. We should be able to provide it and receive it amongst each other in a more natural, organic way if we're being good friends. I know this is – now we're getting into a bunch of different topics now,
yeah,
friendship too, but I think it all goes together.
Absolutely. Well, and that's – like it makes sense that there are so many things involved here
mm-hmm.
because the fullness – of reality mm-hmm. is heaven. And so any
with all the transcendentals.
Exactly. Yeah. So and any experience that we have that is quote unquote heavenly or close to heaven should reflect a fullness of that reality
sure.
to an extent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that we had all of those elements
right.
to a degree. It's gonna connect, you know, yeah, friendship, the transcendentals, emotion, mm-hmm. Spiritual natures, you know.
Even catharsis, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you couldn't tell, this is basically our way of
this is our way of coping.
This is our catharsis. Yeah,
exactly.
We're just processing.
We just thought we'd
that,
you know, let you all enjoy this.
Exactly.
Too.
But this episode is mostly for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Putting that out there.
Let's just provide a cathartic experience for ourselves and have a camera on with it, you know.
Yeah, when you say it like that, that sounds like kind of super egotistic.
But it's not when I put it that way, it does sound that way. But in fact, this is an experience that all humans share.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
One way or the other, we all encounter it. We all experience it every time we have some encounter with beauty. But also, it's good to recognize these things because the relationship between goodness, truth, and beauty with pain is. I mean, it's a really interesting idea. It's
yeah.
a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
And it's deep. It kind of touches upon some of the deepest experiences of our lives.
As a person, yeah.
That is the longing that we experience in all the moments of our life, but especially in those most precious and beautiful and memorable ones.
Yeah. And I would say that, yeah, one thing and then an idea maybe to close. But I just in these moments is St. Augustine's, you know, one of like probably his most famous line, except for maybe after Lord Make Me Chaste, just not yet, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But
it's a good quote.
I am like, you have made us for yourself, Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest
exactly,
in you.
Exactly.
Like that is what we're experiencing, really, is just the restlessness of being a human on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And these places are like where we have opportunities to actually rest a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when we're kind of taken out of that period of rest,
we feel the restlessness
more acutely. Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's what's so interesting is that, at least when I was younger, I had the kind of naive notion that in our life, there's the good things and then there's the painful things. and you kind of seek the one and you avoid the other, and you can kind of just separate them. Mm. But the older I get, the more I realize that they're causally linked into one, yeah. in a sense. At least yep. in our experience of this earth, there's not an eternity, but at least in this earth, whenever you have a good experience, there's going to be pain that goes with it because of that restlessness. Like those moments of rest make us aware of the restlessness that we feel all mm-hmm. along. And so, you know, if you really never want to feel pain, then what you need to do is avoid all experiences with beauty and goodness.
Oof.
But if you want anything good and beautiful robot. In life, yeah, exactly. If you want to just like be kind of a stoic robot and, you know, never be hurt by anything, that's great. You know, never read a good book, never go out in the beauty of nature, never go on a vacation, never spend good time with friends. But if you do want those good things, friends, you know, mm-hmm. experiencing the beauty of art and nature, then be prepared to experience some pain with it.
Yeah. And in ways, it seems like suffering just continues to be like kind of a topic for the podcast.
Suffering's just a topic for life.
It is. Know? But what I was just going to say is like, what was the most good, I know that's an incorrect superlative, but
yeah.
the best, the most truthful, the most beautiful, and like the most unifying event that ever happened in human history was Christ's redemptive act on the cross.
Right.
And
what was the most painful
exactly
and horrific act in human history?
That's yeah. The cross. So
yeah.
in a way, like the joy followed by the sorrow is a way to share in the cross as well, mm-hmm. which I certainly don't think about. I think more about like sharing in the cross and other kind of suffering. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of suffering that we're all like, oh yeah, I can suffer. I'll do those things for Jesus. But except for when these kind of things come up, mm-hmm. then it's like, no, get me the heck out of here.
Exactly.
But I think maybe just to close, like a really good remedy that I want to work on, too, is looking at these events or talking about them or sharing about them or whatever with like almost aggressive gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, I think, a lot harder to feel sorrow or self-pity or all of these things when you're expressing how grateful you are for mm-hmm. the fact that they happened or who you were with or whatever.
Yeah.
And thanking those people directly too. Mm-hmm. Like I really want to like go from this and like text like individually like all of the people on the trip and thank them for being on it, but also something personal, not just like thanks for being on the trip, it's so good to be with you. Like I can yeah. say that to every single person right. I've ever been on any vacation with ever.
Sure.
But like to thank, you know, well actually that's not true. There are some people I probably wouldn't thank. Honest,
some people we would have loved to have been on, to have not been on trip. Yes, with, you know?
That doesn't apply in this case. I actually truly did enjoy being with everyone.
Sure. Same.
But especially because a lot of them are listening, I wouldn't want them to think otherwise.
Yay. Okay.
Okay. Maybe that part out.
No. That's funny.
Anyways, but just like I want to like tell them why I specifically am grateful for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that then I'm not like wallowing in self pity. I'm not in myself. I'm actually going out to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then they feel seen, which might be a way for them to kind of heal a little bit from their right. own, like, probably being down in the dumps a little bit.
Probably everybody's feeling that way a little bit.
Yeah, I assume they are.
And, I love that you said it because, honestly, when you approach good things with gratitude, it makes you realize that those good things are gifts.
Mm,
they're not just yeah. good things that you did or good things that yeah. happened to you.
Yep.
They are a gift. And when, I think, as we see with Christmas or birthday gifts, what's the way that you can show that you really appreciate a gift? It's by using it, right?
And
letting it be something that occurs, it's not just something nice that you opened at your birthday or that you unwrapped under the Christmas tree. It's something that you use in the future. Like I know with me, every gift that I got growing up, like if it was something I really liked and was grateful for, it kept showing up in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the reason I bring that up is because I think if you approach these good experiences with gratitude, you learn to see them as gifts.
Yeah.
And if you see them as gifts, then you recognize them as things that you now have for your possession, which you can use in the future. So instead of just dwelling on this trip in the past and like looking through the pictures and thinking about memories like, oh, I liked being in Alaska in the past. If I see it as a gift, now I am encouraged to say, okay, what can I take from that and use in the future?
Yeah, yeah.
Because then it becomes joyful and uplifting and inspiring when you have motivation to bring it into future and not just for it to be something you dwell on that you did in the past. You
know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, dude.
So, yeah.
Well.
So thanks for
thus bearing ends with us. Our catharsis session.
Yeah. So thank you for you know
for being for vibing. yeah, if you have any memories that you want to share that, like, maybe are you still kind of dwell on a lot, or just beautiful experiences that you're grateful for, let's start a gratitude chain. Mm-hmm. Share them below. We'd love to hear about them.
For sure.
Or, you know, if you're maybe struggling in that kind of, like, how do I get out of, like, a cycle of self-pity? Mm-hmm. You know, we'd love to pray for you in that, you know, let us know. Certainly pray for me, I'm assuming, in this case, pray for Nate too, in that kind of
please
area.
I need it.
We all need prayers.
Yeah. By the way, we're not super sad, but we do just want to put this out there.
It's in our feels. We're feeling it.
It's in our feels a little bit. And if you are too, that's great.
Yeah.
And, and you know, but if you are inordinately or like approaching what could be the vice of sadness, where it's just dwelling in self-pity, then maybe stop listening to sad music for a few days, you know?
Yeah.
Just change up some of those habits and think about something
positive. Go on a run.
Yeah, go on a run. Okay, actually, real quick, I think we should do this. I think we should each go back and forth and just say a few things that we think could immediately make your day better. Because I have a few that I've thought of before. I don't know about you. I'll give you a minute to think of
them. Okay, go ahead.
For me, if I'm having a little bit of a rough day, what I like to do is I go for a run and an intense workout. After that, while I'm still warm, I take a cold shower, and then I pray for a little while. That only takes like an hour and a half. By the time you're done with it, you feel world's better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Now that depends on, you know, maybe you don't like working out, maybe if you really don't like cold showers, but trust me, if you do that just for that little hour and a half, you're gonna feel better after that. So that's one thing, but also just not overindulging in sad feelings.
Yep. I would reiterate the running or exercise. I don't love cold showers, so I'm on the train for that. Prayer, definitely, particularly scripture. Whatever scripture is like most that you just consistently touches you the most, I often go back to, or the Psalms. Psalms are very good to read when you're feeling anything, mm-hmm. because they touch like every human emotion we experience. Mm-hmm. And then just calling a friend or a family member, like it doesn't have to be talking about that event or that thing or whatever
be
bothering
it's
me. It's just talking to someone.
Exactly.
And that definitely has helped, because it just gets my mind out of something else. And then I might come back to it like, oh, I wasn't thinking about that. I'm like, oh, well, it doesn't actually bother me as much. Mm-hmm. Those would be my recommendations. So. Yeah.
Cool. Wonderful.
Sweet.
Well, strive for happiness.
Indeed.
Encounter beauty and goodness, and embrace the pain that might come with that.
Amen. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us for another episode of All Good in the Brotherhood.
Don't know what that accent was.
Yeah, I was trying to do like seven different things.
That's fair.
But okay. All good in the Brotherhood. Yeah.
We might just have to end this episode. All right. Okay. Peace, guys.
Yep. Adios.